The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. Yes, lots and lots of activity in Israel over the past 24 hours. So we're all hanging in pretty much. Obviously the conflict has extended itself quite significantly. Unfortunately, we are now also counting the number of casualties. Five people were killed by rocket fire yesterday, five Israelis. And of course, quite a number of people have been reported killed on the Gaza side of the border. More than 30 people, we understand, and quite a number of people injured as well. So definitely hostilities have escalated even further in Operation Guardian of the Walls. That is the name.
Is that the name
that
now?
Has now been officially given to this operation, Operation Guardian of the Walls, Mifza Shomer HaChomot in Hebrew. And I'm guessing that the reference to the walls might have something to do with the fact that hostilities broke out on Yom Yerushalayim, and maybe a reference to the walls of Jerusalem. I'm not really quite sure what the logic is, but that's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, again, I mean, no one consulted me on the marketing aspects of it, but I would have gone with something a little bit different. Either way, Anthony, it's you and I were chatting last night when the rockets were going off where you live. I think you were in shelters. My son was in a shelter. It really sounded horrific. The point that you made to me, sometimes further away is worse. I think you're right. But either way, give us a sense of what was happening.
Well, a lot of Israelis were actually in bomb shelters even last night. I had two trips to the bomb shelter during the middle of the night. And I know that many other people in the central part of Israel did the same. At least two trips, some people a lot more than that. When I have a look at the list of rockets that have been fired over the past, just through the night, one can get a sense, especially for people in the south, that there has really been little time to sleep. And the tactic, the first missile barrage that was fired towards Tel Aviv in the central part of Israel came just before 9 o'clock last night. Something like 130 missiles fired pretty much all at the same time within the space of 3 to 5 minutes. Just a massive barrage of rockets in an attempt to try to confuse the Iron Dome system. I'm guessing that that's now the tactic. Similar barrages have been experienced during the course of the night as well. But when you start firing towards Tel Aviv and towards the central part of Israel, then as the Prime Minister said in his address to the Israeli nation yesterday, the gloves have come off. There is no doubt that there is a serious intention to hurt people. Let's bear in mind that as opposed to the Israeli weaponry system, which is very, very precise, very guided, very intended, the Hamas weapon system is not quite so precise. Their version of precise is, let's try and send a missile into an area that's as populated as possible, and in that way, we're likely to hit somebody, a civilian. Unfortunately, five civilians have already been killed. Two women yesterday in the city of Ashkelon, another person in Rishon LeZion last night, and then during the middle of the night, during the middle of the night barrage, two Arab Israelis were killed in the city of Lod when a missile hit their car. Just a summary of some of the events that have taken place. A bus was hit in Holon last night, a bus that was driving. The people were quite seriously injured on that bus. The bus was completely gutted from the fire that ensued after the explosion. Miraculously, nobody was killed on that bus, but certainly some people have sustained some quite serious injury. A number of residential properties have been hit, including a house in Yehud, just near to Ben Gurion Airport. The entire house was absolutely destroyed. But sensibly, the family were in their bomb shelter, in their security room, and their lives were saved only because of that. So Israel's defense system works in layers. We have the different military layers, including the Iron Dome and various other anti-missile systems. But the final layer is always your bomb shelter. That is the final security layer, and there is a great deal of emphasis on people to adhere to the rules, to move to bomb shelters when you hear sirens. Don't ignore it. Don't think that it's not going to happen to you. That bomb shelter can be the difference between saving your life or not. And so everybody has been very much encouraged to move to their bomb shelters, to their security rooms, whenever called upon to do so. And in Yehud yesterday, we saw exactly why that's the case. And indeed, not only in Yehud, there have been a number of other examples. Houses were hit in Rishon LeZion. A house was hit in Ramat Aviv. Houses were hit in various other places around Israel. So there has been quite significant damage to property. Ashkelon has come under significant fire. And also in Ashkelon, a gas pipeline facility and gas storage facility was hit an explosion quite nearby. The oil tank went on fire. The fire continues to burn still now. That is likely to take some time until that particular fire can be put out. Fortunately, there were no injuries, no casualties in that incident. But we can see that the rocket fire is fairly indiscriminate, and wherever there is residential, wherever there are civilians, rockets are being fired in that direction. Even as far north as Netanya, sirens were being heard yesterday. A limited call-up of reserve soldiers has already taken place. A number of people going into the army. There was due to take place a very, very substantial military exercise within the next, starting within the next week or two, and quite a number of people have already been put on alert to be called up for that exercise. It's not clear what the status of that exercise now it will be now, and whether people might not be redirected towards active duty rather than to take part in that exercise. Quite a number of people have been reported killed in Gaza. The IDF has carried out a significant number of very, very targeted attacks, particularly against Hamas targets and against Hamas operatives. They have resumed the policy of trying to hit senior Hamas officials. They have been quite successful in achieving that. And the irony of the situation is that a lot of the Hamas intelligence work and military work is undertaken from residential properties, from residential apartment buildings. So yesterday, there was an ultimatum issued by Hamas that if Israel continues to fire towards high-rise buildings in Gaza, then they will retaliate by hitting Tel Aviv. Israel, of course, did not take the foot off the pedal in terms of firing against these high-rise buildings, because that is where the military activities are really taking place. And it should be noted that Israel sent warnings to residential families living in those buildings. They were warned to evacuate the building before the building was destroyed. There were 2 8-story buildings in Gaza. Messages were being sent furiously to the residential, to the civilians living in those buildings, to evacuate the building ahead of the building being hit by Israeli Air Force fire due to the level of military and intelligence work being undertaken by Hamas in those buildings. And Israel will continue to take those buildings out if necessary, but always doing whatever they can in order to warn the civilians who live around that area. Now, Hamas has said that quite a number of civilians have been killed. It would be worth noting that something like 200 missiles that were fired towards Israel have actually landed in Gaza, have not crossed the border. And it is reported that some of those missiles have been responsible for killing Gazan civilians. So when we talk about casualties, civilian casualties, I'm not suggesting for a moment that there have been no civilian casualties at the hands of Israel. There may well have been some. But Israel is really doing whatever they can in order to avoid civilian casualties, really taking this very, very targeted approach in order to hit the Hamas operatives. And it is ironically Hamas who has been killing some of their own civilians by virtue of the fact of these rockets that have not even crossed over the Gaza border towards Israel, landing within Gazan territory. So that's really the summary of the events of yesterday. Still rocket fire during the early hours of this morning. There were indications that Hamas wanted somehow to then move towards some sort of a ceasefire arrangement quite quickly. I think that the Israeli government has decided that that's not going to happen for now. Now that the gloves are off, there is going to be quite substantial attacks directed towards Gaza. I think that this operation, Guardian of the Walls.
You see, that's what I was thinking. Picking. As you were saying this operation, I'm thinking, damn it, I can't remember the name. Guardian of the Walls. It's just not, it's not sticky. But all right.
Think about it in terms of Jerusalem.
No. I get it. I get the meaning. I get the meaning. But yeah, look, if I was doing the marketing, I would have also said it's not great because there's always this allegation that Gaza is a prison, therefore walls guard, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. But again, that doesn't really matter. I'm being completely ridiculous. Charles asks a very relevant question. He says, why do the gloves only seem to come off when they go for Tel Aviv? What about Ashkelon and Sderot? Which is an interesting question because those areas have been suffering for years now.
They have. I think the answer is really twofold. In the first instance, I think it would be fair to say, particularly in the case of Sderot and the border area that surrounds the Gaza Strip, it's not quite as densely populated as the cities of Ashdod, as Ashkelon, and of course as the central part of Israel, Tel Aviv, Rishon LeZion, even further north towards Ramat Aviv, Ramat HaSharon. Those areas are clearly much more densely populated. So when sending a rocket towards the central part of Israel, the likelihood that it's going to cause death or injury is much greater than sending a rocket towards Sderot. Now, admittedly, the people in Sderot have had to suffer a lot because of this, because the Israeli government consider missiles that are sent locally around the Gaza border region to be less antagonistic than rockets that are potentially sent towards Ashdod, towards Ashkelon, and towards the central part of Israel, simply because of the density of the population. So I think that that's in the first instance. Of course, also, the issue about short range versus longer range. Short range shows a certain more limited capability. The moment Hamas starts to show a longer range capability and a willingness to deploy longer range missiles, there seems to also indicate greater intent. You need more sophisticated missiles, greater investment in cost and things like that. So the moment it goes slightly longer range, right, it just shows
an escalation. Right. I just want to actually ask you Rakhadi's question as well. Excuse me. Why, morning, Howard, why is the international community not saying anything about the indiscriminate firing of rockets at civilians by Hamas / the Palestinians? That's from Rakhadi. So, I mean, I know the Americans certainly have stood up. Many American politicians have stood up for Israel during this time, but what about the rest?
Well, I could ask Rakhadi the same question because unfortunately I don't have any magical answers. But I was somewhat amused by the statement that was issued by the French government, which called upon Israel to respond proportionately. Now, I just wonder what proportionately means when, let's just try and, you know, switch the situation around for a short moment and consider the possibility of firing 130 missiles within a space of 5 minutes towards the central part of Paris. What would the French government consider to be proportionate under those circumstances? So I don't really know what this proportionate story is, but I think the biggest proportion would be really to go in and to destroy some significant part of Gaza. 100%. Unfortunately, the problem, of course, is that we consider the Gaza civilians in the most part to be innocent bystanders to a large degree, to not necessarily be involved directly in this. And so we don't want to take things out on them. We really want to take it out on those people who are driving the operation.
Anthony, I'm going to ask you. There were just so many questions that are coming through. Jenny asks also an important one. What is going on with Israeli Arabs? Why are they protesting?
So there have been significant protests, particularly in the city of Lod, where an emergency situation has been declared. Now, I mean, there's such a lot of speculation. I mean, you asked the question yesterday about why now? Why has this suddenly happened now? I read a very, very fascinating article, which unfortunately we don't have time to look at right now, about speculating why now. But it seems as if though the Israeli, that this has been planned for some time. This is not just something that happened on the spur of the moment, that this whole escalation operation has been planned for some time, and that the Hamas operatives have been driving the message through the communities, through the West Bank, and indeed through the Israeli Arabs, to try to raise the ante a little bit. And potentially this is why there's such a lot of escalation as well, of violence within the Israeli Arab community, particularly within Lod, but also Jerusalem and elsewhere, the issue of Jerusalem. And it seems as if though there's been a lot of subversive activity going on before this event to try and just light the flames wherever possible.
Anthony, lots and lots of questions about the situation in Israel. There's a lot of misinformation, says Jenny, with regard to Israel's response. I saw a declaration of war last night. I don't know if it was real. Has Israel actually declared war? What is that? You know, I've been getting a message across my social media networks, people asking me if some statement by Benjamin Netanyahu is true. I believe it is fake news. What is that? What is the situation?
I don't believe that any formal declaration of war has been issued. And to be honest, I'm not quite sure if it's really relevant these days. Once upon a time, this was a thing. Mm. You know, we declared war against such and such a nation or another, and things go into an official war footing. The truth of the matter is that in Israel, there is something of a reluctance to formally declare war, simply because the moment you declare a war situation, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're declaring war against another country. It just means that you have ruled that internally we are in a war situation, and then certain provisions become relevant. Certain money can flow, certain laws apply. So declaring war is a significant issue for our internal management, but no official statement of war was issued. I listened to the Prime Minister's statements yesterday, last night, when he made his statement to the Israeli people. He certainly didn't declare war. He did say the gloves have come off. He did say that Israel will respond very, very forcefully. He did say that this is not going to be a short operation, that it will take some time, and that Israel has great intention to do whatever is needed in order to restore security to the people of Israel. But he didn't actually say, we are declaring war on Hamas or on Gaza or anything like that. So, but once again, you know, is it really a relevant statement? I don't know, because what we have here at the moment is, for all intents and purposes, a war situation.
Absolutely. No matter how you look at it, Ivana wants to know, is this being recorded? It is, Ivana, and you'll be able to go to the Chai FM website and you'll find the podcast there to be able to play it. Ansan says solidarity with Israel at this extremely difficult time. Brian wants to know, why didn't they take out the big rockets right at the beginning? For me, it's a couple of parts to that question. Brian's asking that what I'm confused about is the very, very clearly the amount of ammunition and missiles that had been stockpiled in Gaza and their ability, Hamas's ability to launch an attack like this of this magnitude must be very, very worrying for Israel. Was Israel caught by surprise? Did they know about this level of capability? Has there been any discussion around that?
Well, I don't think that this will have caught Israel by surprise, because I think that Israel is pretty much aware of all the movements of what goes on in Gaza, including the weapon stockpiling, including the rocket capabilities, including the rocket manufacturing facilities. So the question really is, why didn't Israel take this out before today? Why was this not something that was taken out on an ongoing basis? So I think that the answer to that is comes in a few parts. In the first instance, this is really what the closure around Gaza is all about. When we had that discussion with Human Rights Watch, where they accused Israel of creating an open-air prison for Gaza, then now we can understand why Israel is so eager to put a very, very firm boundary around Gaza in order to prevent the flow of arms and ammunition into Gaza. And in spite of the very, very significant wall, notional wall, not a real wall. I mean, there is a real wall being constructed in certain parts, but the real tight grip that Israel attempts to maintain around Gaza, the fact of the matter is that they somehow succeed in bringing weapons in, whether it be through the Egyptian border, whether it be by sea, whether it be smuggling in through ways that Israel is not able to secure. There is an absolutely definite inflow of arms and ammunition into Gaza, and Israel has intelligence that is able to pick this up. So why not have taken care of it beforehand? Well, I think the simple answer to that is during the days of quiet, when these arms and ammunition are flowing into Gaza, any strike by Israel at that moment in order to try somehow to take out a certain flow of arms or to take out a certain weapons storage facility may well light the flames for a much more significant operation. So what Israel tries to do during the so-called days of quiet is to act in a certain way that won't light the big fire. Because the last thing Israel wants to do during those quiet days is to create a moment where there will be a sudden open conflict. And so certain things are acceptable in terms of maintaining quiet, and certain things are not. And unfortunately, that is a very, very thin line to cross. So while Israel is obviously tracking the flow of arms and the storage and the manufacture and everything that goes on, it's not necessarily doesn't necessarily have a free hand to take care of it on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis, because essentially we would just be creating a conflict with Gaza on an ongoing basis. And let's not forget that every time that the Prime Minister signs an order to authorize any operation that goes on beyond Israel's borders, on that piece of paper that he signs to authorize the operation is an estimate of the number of people who would be killed while carrying out that operation. He signs on that piece of paper effectively authorizing the death of a certain number of people who are expected to be killed as a result of carrying out that operation. It's not a decision that one can take lightly. It's very, very easy to say, oh, we're going to go in and we're going to destroy them and we're going to take out their operation. We're going to do everything. But when you get down to the little small print which says, and this is going to cause the death of X number of our citizens, then it becomes a little bit more difficult to sign off. So, you know, we need to just bear that in mind every time any authorization is given to carry out an operation. It's not quite the same as what happens in Syria, where we go in with our aircraft, we drop a bomb every once in a while on a weapon storage facility. We know that it won't precipitate a return war immediately. So it's all being very, very carefully choreographed to make sure that we can keep some sort of control over what goes on without necessarily lighting a huge fire that could cause a war and the death of innocent people.
Unbelievable. Absolutely. Taking a look at some of the messages. Firstly, just to tell you as well, and there's in response to Ivana, the Chai FM podcasts are also on Spotify. So that is good news as well. You can find them on Spotify as well as chaifm.com. Is Ashkelon significant in terms of the military context?
Ashkelon is not significant in terms of a military context, but Ashkelon is like a halfway towards Tel Aviv situation. In other words, it's not Sderot in the Gaza border region, and it's not central Israel, Tel Aviv, Rishon LeZion, that area, but it's kind of halfway between. So the moment Ashkelon came under rocket fire, and Ashkelon unfortunately has been one of the significant casualties over the last few days, the moment Ashkelon came under rocket fire, that was certainly a statement of escalation, a partial escalation, not a full escalation as we saw yesterday with Tel Aviv coming under rocket fire, but it's certainly just one notch up from the Gaza border area. Let's just bear in mind that Ashkelon is only about 10 kilometers from the Gaza border itself. So it's not that huge distance away from Gaza, but it's certainly one notch up from any attacks on the Gaza border region area.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely right. So many messages. Unfortunately, we can't get to all of them. We do need to leave it there. Anthony Reich, thank you, as always. Thank you for staying on just a little bit longer and giving us this vital information.